Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 417. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end, Shahid Abdul-Hadi. How you doing, sir?
I am doing fine, or as fine as can be after running 10 miles for some crazy reason.
That's a lot of mileage to run.
No kidding. I had the day off, and I'm like, you know, I've never done that before. Let me see if I can do that. How bad can, like, I've done 5 miles, I've done 7 miles, like, how bad can it be? Yeah. I don't know how people do marathons, because that just seems like doing a half marathon just felt like a torture. Like, just like, it's not even, it's funny where it's not even the physical thing, it's the mental thing. It's like, you can run, but you get to the point, like, why am I doing this? like, is nobody watching me? I'm not going to win any money. This is just uncomfortable. Like, what?
I've had a lot of friends and family, like, they either hit 30 or 40, and they had this sudden urge, like, I really need to run a marathon. And tell them, like, you do realize the first guy that ran a marathon died when he got done with it, right? And it's just like, why? Like you said, like, you're not going to win anything. Like, I've only known one person to stick with it enough. Like, he stuck with it enough to qualify for Boston, the Boston Marathon, which is a pretty tough feat because he actually qualified the 1 year, but then didn't get entrance into the Boston Marathon. So he's qualified twice, but everyone else, both of my brothers, like, couldn't finish it. At different times, and it's just like you do all that training on top of that to not finish.
I mean, it's tough.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, once you hit middle age, it's this whole thing. I want to see if I can do it before I get too old. Although it's like that's really a young man's thing anyway, unless you've been doing it for a long time. I don't know. Midlife crisis type thing. Some people buy sports cars, some people run marathons. What can I say?
Yeah, it cracks the people who do that. I'm like, nah, I'm good going to the gym. Like, I don't need to do that. I think the biggest thing that I did was Tough Mudder. And oh no, it wasn't that one. Which one was that? It's the shorter one.
Or the Spartan Race?
No, Spartan Race is the longest one. That one can just go and buzz right off. Warrior Dash that's the easiest one. It's a 5K. I think Tough Mudder is a 10K, and Spartan Race is 15K. And I think they get more. There are more obstacles as you move along in that too.
Yeah, I've always left the whole pain to run through mud and jump over stuff for this light. I don't mind exercising, but paying to be in that type of race to get dirty, it's like, oh, it's fun, and da-da-da-da-da. It's, yeah. And as far as, like, marathons go, anything that leads to your toenails falling off, and you're like, oh, that's natural, it's like, yeah, thanks, but no thanks.
Yeah, I forgot about that. My sister-in-law has had that happen numerous times, actually, since I've known her. It's just like, no. Like, just add this to the reasons of why I don't feel like doing this.
Yeah, like, toenails aren't supposed to, body parts aren't supposed to fall off. We're not lizards. So.
Yeah, they're not shark teeth, where they just fall out and replace themselves all the time.
So, speaking of shark teeth and things falling off, Great Balls of Fire.
Sure, smooth transition.
Yeah, like, it was a funny pay-per-view where most of the heels won, but you didn't really, like, it won, like, bad results. Like, at least half the show, because it was kind of,
well,
like, the beginning was kind of like that Bray Wyatt, Seth Rollins match was just boring. And I don't know, and I blame Bray Wyatt for that, because, like, Seth Rollins has enough pay-per-view matches to know that he usually wrestles to entertain his style, even coming back from a knee injury. Ray Wyatt seems like I've made a joke, like he's pregnant. Like he's been packing on weight since he's been on Raw. And not in a good way. And the feud's just been boring. Like, it's like we don't know what to do with these guys, so we'll have them do something together. And there's no stakes.
Yeah. That's kind of the biggest problem, is that there aren't any stakes. Wyatt's still, like, it's... you can only, in some ways, say it so many times that he never gives you a reason why he's really going after the guy. You know, like, everyone else kind of in the two main events, there was a reason why their people wanted to kick each other's asses. And why it's just like, oh, yeah, I'm the king of Jafar or whatever he is at this point.
I'm the face of fear, the new king of evil, or the eater. Like, it's that
the eater of worlds.
Undertaker,
yeah.
Comic book stuff, and like, you know, you're a king slayer, but you're a false king giving false hope, and I'm gonna beat you because I'm the true lord of the swamp, or like what, whatever. Like, it just. Bray Wyatt stuff always seemed weird. It even seemed more weird when he was actually going after titles. Like,
oh,
he's a weird character because it's like, this is the whole thing where you don't, where our suspension of disbelief in wrestling comes in handy. Because, like, you see a character right. Like Bray Wyatt, like, why is he in the WWE? What is he trying to do? Is he trying to, like, influence fans? Is he trying to be a cult leader? He wants to be a world, like, why does he want to be world champ? Does he care about money? Like, it's just, you ask certain questions about Bray Wyatt, and you realize his character doesn't make sense in, like, the real world application. So, he's a character where it just proves sometimes it's best just to watch.
Oh, yeah, and I guess that's the other fun thing about it. Like, I guess the way he words promos, they always... And the way they present him is always good. But, you know, when when the words lack substance, it just kind of ends up hurting the product. Like, you can make it look as nice as you want to, but it doesn't really do you a whole lot of good.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So, you had that match. Iron Man tag match was good. Like, the Hardys and Cesaro and Sheamus have good chemistry together. And it's funny, like, a dichotomy where the Hardys are the old vets, but they're the underdogs because Sheamus and Cesaro are just so much bigger than both of them and younger than both of them.
not by a lot, but they're younger than them.
But it's fun. It's amazing how Sheamus and Cesaro went from, like, you know, having this best of 45 series that didn't even end in a victory to we're going to be the disgruntled tag team and one's a face and one's a heel to they're both heels and they get along and they work together. Like, you figured, you know, they wouldn't be, by this time, normally they do those mismatched tag teams. They play it for comedy or they break up. And now it's like this, they're on the same page and they work well together. And, like, they have matching outfits. They got matching gimmicks. The crowd cares about them. And they can both wrestle. So, like, that match, especially the end, like, Cesaro was working his ass off. And, like, the last 10 minutes of that match was just booked perfectly. And kudos to the Hardys for hanging. Because, you know, like, the Hardys can definitely wrestle, but it's been a while since they've had to wrestle and, like, get over based on wrestling.
Yeah, that was the biggest surprise to me in that match, because I think Chris and I mentioned it. I mean, a lot of their matches recently are all gimmick matches, which is fine, because they've been as entertaining as hell, but, you know, in a 30-minute match, I thought that they'd have a worse time of it. But they didn't. I mean, they really did a... Because even... I love that the beginning was something that I hope it doesn't get pulled out too often, but that was something that was really creative, like, because it was a misdirection that led to offense. Like, it wasn't, you know, there's always some type of heel tactic where it's either knocking someone off the ropes or distracting the ref. Like, this was just distracting the guy in the ring without attacking him, which is It'd be fun if they came up with more things in that vein, I guess, in the future in those types of matches. But yeah, that was, I don't know. It was just a really good match from start to finish, because just getting the Hardys in the hole that early kind of gives it a context, and it gives it a reason to happen too. Like, most of the time you're like, oh my God, why did someone take a pinfall after 2 minutes?
Yeah, that's why Survivor Series has always been kind of problematic sometimes, with, like, people get a pinfall off a suplex.
Oh, yeah.
After, like, 2 or 3 minutes. So, yeah, like, this one is kind of made, like, the bro kick has been proven, like, usually he hits you, you get pinned.
Oh, like, right.
They've made that move important, so it's not surprising. Like, it's not like the whole, you got to work them over and then hit the move. It's like, it's kind of like the RKO. It's like, it's easy. You can duck it and you can block it, but if he hits you with it, then usually it's a wrap. So it's not that surprising. And then, yeah, it's like, you know, it made, like, the Hardys didn't lose anything from it, because it's kind of like, you know, it's basically like the Hardys just ran out of time. So both teams look good. And
yeah,
it's fun, like, how the whole feud, it started from, like, you know, fake mutual respect to, you know, you guys are washed up living off nostalgia, which a lot of people have been saying that, because it was even reinforced on Raw with, the, you know, with Anderson and Gallows. And then the Hardys are like, you know, we can still hang. And you keep wondering, like, that other shoe to drop with them, because it's like this whole, they're doing Hardy Boys, you know, Renaissance, or Hardy Boys Nostalgia. And even then, they kind of realize, like, you know, y'all cheering us because y'all miss us, but y'all really want the TNA version. And they drop, like, clues here and there. Monday was, like, the most blatant they've ever been, like...
yeah, definitely.
Gimmick, like. And I find it funny where it was the same night when Dixie Carter comes back to do the documentary with Kurt Angle. Like, yeah, something is going on between that, her, and this whole Kurt Angle thing. It's some weird stuff going on, and, like, you know, and I don't know exactly what it is, but I'm real curious about it, and I don't necessarily think it's coincidence either.
Yeah, because I think, I don't know who mentioned the fact that she might, that Dixie Carter might be getting an on-air role. I'm like, if that happens, because, like, it's so odd, like, with the Kurt Angle thing, it's something that's going to wreck his career, but he can talk about how many pills he was popping on the WWE network.
Literally multiple DUIs.
The seconds after Raw ends, or less than a second after Raw ends.
Yeah.
But something can wreck his career.
The whole thing is funny, because they've been building for this thing for, like, at least a month. And somehow Corey Graves has been, like, the investigator reporter involved in, like, all this stuff when he's not being involved, like, the end zone cast stuff. And then Dixie shows up. Of course, you hear the rumors. And it's still just weird. Like, you're used to seeing, Vince is kind of like, if it makes money, I don't care. Like, you saw Eric Bischoff come back and be the general manager of Raw. And that's back when they probably hated each other, like, maybe a couple years before. And it's like, you know, Vince buried the hatch and like, let's make money, let's make business. But at least they acknowledged WCW and mentioned WCW. They never used to mention TNA, like, at all. And the first time they really talked about it, like, in depth, was when AJ Styles did the podcast with Steve Austin. But beyond that, they make a joke. It's like, oh, I was gone for 8 years. Like, Mickie James and Christian were, like, locked up.
Well, and Styles, like, even though he mentioned it on the podcast, like, they still haven't really made a habit of it, of talking about it. They talk about his New Japan stint all the time, but they still don't really mention TNA. But yeah, because you can't even say that the floodgates really opened. It was just like, it got mentioned, and things kind of moved along.
He's like the first one where you kind of had to mention it, because at least the other people from TNA were, like, in WWE, or, like, Anderson Gallows were in Japan. Like, everybody knew AJ Styles was in TNA, and it wasn't like AJ Styles was in Japan for, like, a decade. He was just there for a little bit, so...
Yeah.
And it wasn't the whole thing, like, Joe was in TNA for a long time, but Joe was in other places, too, and then Joe was in NXT. So it's like, he existed somewhere, in WWE before he came to the main roster. But I made the joke saying, of course, they mentioned Dixie Carter and TNA right when TNA is called. It's not called TNA anymore because it's Global Force Wrestling. I'm like, how about that? They finally mentioned it when it technically doesn't exist.
Well, that's that is pretty funny. I hadn't thought about that, but that was a whole ball of wax that I haven't gotten into on any of these shows. That
oh god, Jeff Jarrett's the biggest scam artist of all time. Like, he created a company where they filmed a whole bunch of shows no one saw, had a tour no one went to, had championship matches no one saw, and yet that's a better alternative to TNA that's had over, 12 years? Oh, I'm on TNA since, 13 years? 14 years?
It's something. Hold on. Was the Slammiversary was 15, wasn't it? Because
I wouldn't be surprised.
That last pay-per-view had a special number to it. I'm going to have to look that up. But, yeah, it's something in that range. It's between 12 and 15 years that it's been around.
It debuted in 2002. So, yeah, May 2002. So, 15 years it's been around. Like, I made the joke, like, TNA lasted longer than WCW did. Like, since the time NWA became WCW, TNA outlasted that. That's how long this has been a damn thing. And somehow... Yeah, I don't know. Like, Jeff Jarrett grew up in the business, and that's all I can say. And he interacts with people who didn't grow up in the business and don't know any better. Because I don't know how the hell that happened. Like, I got this.
Oh.
I mean, it's like if somebody made a mixtape nobody listened to, took it to, like, Def Jam Records, and then became president of Def Jam Records. Some nonsense like that. Like, how did that happen?
It mystifies. Like, the fact that I kept on seeing, like, any time that I saw Global Force Wrestling, oh, there's an event, I'm like, you gotta be fucking kidding me. Like, how does this still exist? Or, like, are you getting paid to report this news? Because they were less real than, like, any indie promoter that I've gone to. Like, it's less existent than like AIW in Cleveland. I never saw anything from it. Like, at least I knew where to buy DVDs for, like, PWG or something, or any of those leagues that aren't even near Columbus. Global Force, I had no idea that it was still around until I'd see a headline every now and again. It's just like, oh.
Yeah.
Really?
Like, you click Global Force and it's kind of like Magnus was their first world champ. He had it for 547 days. Who did he wrestle? Like, how do we know? This is like a Fabulous Moolah thing. They could just say, like, I can go on Wikipedia and see his title reign, that he had it for almost two damn years, and I couldn't tell you, how many matches he had. You know, because no one never saw it. People just used to make a joke saying, oh, they filmed stuff. It was never aired anyway, but it happened. It was like, I could tell you I wrestled The Rock in my basement. Why would you believe me? Is it because I said it?
Yeah. That's why you should be believed. You said it. that matters more nowadays than anything else. If you say it, it must be true. I don't know. That is... The Global Force Wrestling takeover of TNA is just hilarious. It's going to lead to nowhere, just like the other stuff has. Like, I don't have any faith in Jarrett or the Fight Network, and I'm completely happy not watching that. I haven't watched it since the Hardys evaporated off TV. I did watch for the wedding, I think. But that's another one where, and I'm going to assume this doesn't happen. Oh, no, I won't go there yet because it's a SmackDown thing. We were talking about, we got off on the tangent with the Hardys. They dropped a lot of hints, and I don't know if having them... this is one of the few times where having a team on a losing streak can pay off into something good. Whether that's where the WWE is going to go or not, with them having lost to Anderson and Gallows, even though that victory felt pretty hollow with the Revival kind of trumping Gallows and Anderson's dickheadishness by delivering even worse dickheadishness.
Yeah. But that just reminded me of something. Like, Raw is heel team heavy. Like, they have three teams that are heels. And I just thought about that because kind of like, you know, the Revival was like out of sight, out of mind because they came to the roster and one of them got hurt as soon as they came on the roster. So, like, they haven't really been there. So, and it's funny, since the Hardys came, they weren't losing any matches till they started losing to Sheamus and Cesaro. And now this whole, maybe we need to become obsolete or we're broken. And you can see them going on a losing streak and figure, it's like, it's something going on with that.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, and this whole thing is like, you don't know if they have the rights or don't have the rights. There's been a lot of smoke, but things, as blatant as they were on Monday, I have to think like that was not by accident. But they were very blatant. Like, they were dropping the lines and...
had Finn Balor doing the little delete when he came out to meet up with them. So it's just like, yeah. I mean, you keep on smelling that they're going to do it at some point. Like, there's no way that they let Matt act that goofy. Like, as much as Vince micromanages things, that's just one of those moments where you're like, this has got to be planned. Like, there's no way he doesn't like the idea if Matt's dropping all these hints left and right. And like you said, it got even heavier on Monday, so it's got to be closer at hand than it has at any point since the Hardys signed.
Yeah. So, speaking of which, and heavy-handed stuff. Okay. I need to know what's going on with Roman Reigns and Braun Strowman. Because I know it's like Roman Reigns is eventually going to be a hero. I hope they don't assume he's going to be a hero in 2017. Because there was nothing in that match to make me... Like, that match was booked to make Braun Strowman look like Steve Austin. Like, Roman Reigns was hitting him with a chair, Braun Strowman no-sold it, and Roman Reigns was backing off. When would you see, like, big-time babyfaces just, like, get scared? Like, I have never seen... I can't remember the last time I've seen that. Like, even when Brock Lesnar clobbered John Cena wasn't afraid of him. John Cena was just getting beat up. Roman Reigns was backing off, like, I don't know what to do with this man. And a lot of times they making Roman Reigns look like a chump. Like, even before the ending of the match and before the fact when he tried to murder Braun Strowman. Yeah, I was watching that just laughing, like, talking about what are we going to do? And people talking about suspension. They're like, he tried to murder that man because he lost the match. He lost because he was stupid. Like,
well, and that's...
He lost on himself.
That's the other funny thing, though. Like, that would be if Reigns won by having Strowman run into the ambulance, everyone that hates Reigns would be hating on him even more for winning in such a chump fashion. But because everyone likes Braun Strowman, everyone's just going to gloss over that fact.
Yeah.
Which fully entertains me. It's just like, okay, you realize that... never mind. I don't care. You know, I just know that I'm not going to talk anyone into that mindset. So, you know, it was really a cheap victory for Strowman, who continues to kind of have the heat. Well, and I guess that's the other weird thing, is it's kind of a heat... I guess, no, it's not really a heel thing. I guess it is kind of a heel thing to cost yourself the match. And then Reigns tries to commit vehicular homicide to really heal it up.
I mean, being a babyface and being stupid kind of goes hand in hand. So that part is like Reigns losing the way he did and make him look like a heel just made him look like a dummy, which is babyface is normally a dummy, so that was fine. But everything that happened after, like beating him up, putting him in the ambulance, and then kind of looking in the mirror like, do I really want to do this? Do I really want to cross the dark? Because he was looking, he zoomed in on his face, and he was looking at that window like, either I'm about to do something dangerous, or I don't know how to park this thing. And parking wasn't the issue with that. It's like they made a big deal. And the fact that, you know, they had a match, it's like they had an impromptu match. You don't even know how it ended, why they were trying to pull him out. And it's like, one, I was thinking, I hope it's not a real fire somewhere. And then two, if these guys are real firefighters, they need to be fired, because Bronson would be dead. Bronson would be dead by now for how long it took them to get him out. And the fact that he crawled away and he didn't need medical assistance, and especially watch, even though that's stupid, but especially watching the whole Kurt Angle thing, is like they enforce, you know, champions overcome agony. That's why they're champions. That nonsense is like, yeah, I don't need medical assistance because I'm a real man.
Yeah, I would love to watch someone. It's always that I'd love to watch this reaction if it happened in a real sport. Tom Brady goes staggering off the field after another concussion. I don't need any help.
Yeah, I'm fine. I'm going to walk it off. And he's walking to the bathroom. Doesn't know where he is. Somebody breaks their leg and it's like, this puss. Yeah, I don't know. I don't need you to help me off the field. I'm going to hop on this broken leg to show how tough I am. It's like,
and then Bill Belichick, not that he doesn't deceive on his injury reports, like, well, pretty much every coach in the NFL. But no, we don't have any news to update you on Tom Brady's condition, huh?
What? I mean,
we saw his leg go inside out.
You'll see him next Sunday, and if you don't see him, then we'll give you an update, maybe, on the Seattle. So, yeah, Bill Belichick would fit in with WWE because they made a big deal about, you know, Braun Strowman's condition and everything that happened. You still don't know what happened. It's like, whoa, he's not dead, but we don't know where he is. I don't know where. He was just in a car accident. And this is another case where, like, people talk about reality and wrestling. I'm like, no. There's no reality in wrestling. That's what wrestling like. Because in real life, Roman Reigns would be arrested. Like, he took it. You just can't try to murder somebody because you lost a match. Like, you know, no holds barred doesn't mean you get to pull a gun out. As Jesse Ventura famously explained to Tony Schiavone. It's like, there's still, you know, there's rules in wrestling, but there's still rules in life. Like, one of them's called the law. And vehicular manslaughter is still kind of, like, against the law in most states.
Yeah, and more than likely, if it was real medical services, be like, no, dude, you were in an extremely violent car crash. You need to go to the hospital. And they pretty much just strap him down. Like, I couldn't imagine that they just let someone like that slide, would they? Is that possible? To be in that horrific of an accident and not go to a hospital?
No, not looking like that. Because he, like I said, it looked like he was in there with a damn shark. Because he's coming in, he's got blood all over him, he's got claw marks. It's like, no. Even if you just had like minor nicks and bruises, they want to check you for like a concussion. Because it's like, you know, you were in a car accident, so that's a possibility. Even if you don't have symptoms, then symptoms could pop up. So at least they were like, you know, we want to take a look at you. He's stumbling around like he got shot. And it's like, oh, he'll be okay eventually. He'll just walk it off. It's like, that's not how it works in real life. I don't care how big you are. And the fact that it's like, and you know, I was expecting him to show up on Monday, but I'm thinking they're saving him for next week. Because the way everything played out, I'm thinking like it's going to be a fatal four-way at SummerSlam.
Oh.
Because it's just, you got these four. Because I'm trying to remember last time. And like Raw, we talk about how Raw being top heavy, you got four guys at the top. They're like all big guys, like size wise. And seeing the three of them interact, like Reigns, Joe, and Lesnar on the mic, was just hilarious because they were just like these three petty badasses, but they were different in a way. Like Joe was this whole thing, like, you know, you want to fight Roman Reigns and you ducking me, and Heyman knows that you can't beat me, so that's why he got you beating this bum. And I love how both him and Brock's point out, like, why is Roman Reigns demanding a title match you lost? and Brock Lesnar basically came out and said, you don't deserve shit. And I just laughed my ass off, because Brock doesn't talk too much anymore, like, on the mic. But when he does, it's always funny, because he just goes straight to the point. He talks like a normal guy. He doesn't talk like he's cutting promos.
Oh, yeah. And I guess he always has, for the most part. Because I remember when he was on Not Tough Enough. The Ultimate Fighter there. That's pretty much the way that he talked on that show. Like, it does not seem any different than his real life. When he cuts his promos. Of course, everyone's jealous of the fact that he's allowed to drop whatever words he wants to.
Yeah, he's the only one, except for, like, the people on SmackDown, they get to say what they want for the most part. But, like, yeah, Brock, it stands out more because everybody else tends to be all scripted and talks dramatically. He just comes out and say, like, what are you talking about? Act like you deserve, or anything like this. You don't deserve shit. And you see Paul Heyman in the background laughing. You see Kurt Angle looking at him like, you know, his dog just died. Like, am I going to get fired because I allowed him to curse?
Yeah, Kurt's like, oh my God, I'm going to get in trouble. I'm going to get in trouble.
Yeah.
I remember JR got booted for letting Ric Flair get too drunk at an event. I just let Brock Lesnar swear on TV.
Yep. And then Roman Reigns instigating, like, you know, I don't know why you're talking to him like that. Like, you know, you talking about you deserve a match, Joe. You lost. What you think is going to be any different? And then it's kind of like they're all digging at each other. They're all, like, justified because, you know, Joe's like, Reigns, you talking that trash. You ain't beat me yet. And you didn't win on the pay-per-view, so get lost. And, like, they all kind of, like, digging at each other, and it's, like, it's curious because they're all, like, tough, athletic, big people, not even counting Strowman. And
oh, right.
It just makes me realize, like, when I look at people like Finn Balor and The Miz, I can't see them being champions unless they wrestle, like, Seth Rollins. And if, like, it's kind of like,
oh,
they could hang with Seth Rollins. And Seth Rollins could hang with, like, you know, Joe and Lesnar and Reigns. Like, he beat Reigns clean and probably Strowman. But I couldn't see, like, The Miz hang with any of those big guys at the top. It's like that, The Miz fall. Like, The Miz can hang with people that can hang with them. But, like, Miz versus Braun Strowman, like, that's, or Miz versus Joe, like, yeah. That don't seem like that would be a competitive match. And it's not The Miz fall. It's just he's normal size. And SmackDown, it works fine because it's not really, like, Baron Corbin is the only, like, kind of big guy.
And yeah, like, he isn't.
Cena's part-time. Orton's in shape, but Orton's not, like, huge. And that's really about it. And, like, Jinder Mahal is just, like, cut up. But it's, like, it's not out of the, you know, you can see The Miz being a world champ there because it's, like, it's nobody that, like, super overshadows him, like, size-wise. Yeah, they got too many guys at the top of the line. Not even counting, like, Kaz and The Big Show. And, like, counting those four that we're talking about. It's like, all this talk about Finn Balor. Like, Finn Balor's great. But Finn Balor weighs maybe, even with the weight I've lost, like, 20 pounds less than I do.
Yeah, he's like really a buck 85 really, or something like that. Yeah,
he's really beating Brock Lesnar in a fair fight. Like, come on now.
Yeah, that is certainly not happening in a fair fight, which was why it was always a little intriguing to me that Paul Heyman interrupted him before Joe got picked as Lesnar's opponent. I'm just like, as much as I like Balor, and it's a lot, that, like you said, that size discrepancy is just too much. Because Rollins is just big enough. Like, because I was kind of shocked that him and Ziggler were around the same size, or him and Sami Zayn are about the same size. Oh, it was him and Sami Zayn. But I always think of Seth Rollins as bigger, being bigger than Sami Zayn. I think they're both in like that 220 area.
Yeah, Seth Rollins is more defined, so it's kind of like he's got that Shawn Michaels thing is where he looks bigger than what he really is because he's in such great shape. So yeah. I think that's what, like, Seth Rollins' CrossFit does a body good. Sami Zayn just looks like he looks like a guy that's fit, but he's not necessarily like cut up or like ripped or anything like that. So that tends to help and make you look bigger than what you are. So, but yeah, it's kind of like that's an issue, and we're just talking like. Like, you got Braun Strowman up there. I'm like, Finn Balor is great, but what is he going to do? Hit him with a gun? He's going to shoot him? He's going to hit him with a chainsaw? Yeah, well, he's going to turn to a real demon and shoot a fireball at him? Like,
yeah, because
if somebody weighs 150 pounds more than you and is athletic, I don't see how you can. I mean, it's wrestling, so you can tell any story you want, but. It always comes my whole thing, like, you can't have it both ways. You can't compare wrestling to other sports and say, why can't they do it that way? And then ignore the fact that other sports have weight classes and wrestling doesn't.
Oh. Yeah. And it's just, because they had started to move to some of the smaller guys, like, it was, like, for a while there weren't any super big guys around. But like you said, Strowman has kind of popped onto the scene. And then Cass gets a call up. Big Show's kind of been off the roster for a while at this point. But, I mean, he pops in and out. But, yeah, Lesnar's champ, and you can't really have... You gotta have another big guy or at least someone close to his size beat him. Because, I mean, Reigns is something of a come down, but that guy is still huge.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's kind of surprising that out of, isn't he the smallest one out of the four?
Yeah. And that's saying something, because he's bigger than almost everybody else beside maybe Sheamus weight-wise and Cass height-wise. But it's like, yeah.
Yeah.
Roman Reigns, out of those four, is the smallest. Roman Reigns is not a small man at all. And and you bring up a good point. Like, they had moved away from... It wasn't a whole bunch of big guys anymore. Like, the big guys were, like, Cena and Sheamus. And, like, all the other big guys were, like, special... Like, Big Show and Mark Henry were, like, special attractions. And that was it. So it was, like, you could have a Dean Ambrose or Finn Balor or Seth Rollins be champ. Because, like... No, Kane didn't wrestle full time anymore. Undertaker didn't wrestle full time anymore. Triple H didn't wrestle full time anymore. So it was like you didn't have it. And now Joe's not necessarily tall, but Joe is built like a building. Like he's a very big, scary man. Reigns is a big guy. Braun Strowman is a mutant. Like no one should be that big, that strong, and that athletic.
Yeah, and Brock Lesnar obviously belongs in the mutant category also.
Yes, and it's kind of like them being at the top makes it harder for everybody else. It's like there's a ceiling that you reach, and if you're not like if you're not Seth Rollins size at the very least, it's difficult to think like, yeah, I could see them beating Roman Reigns in a match. Like, nah, I couldn't see that. I couldn't see them beating like Samoa Joe. And it's funny where Nakamura isn't a big guy, but the way he wrestles, and he's necessarily big enough where I can see him hanging with those guys. But he's the exception. He's not the rule. It's like, I can see him hanging with it. He's probably what? Small, like same size or smaller than Dolph Ziggler? I can see Dolph Ziggler beating any of those guys at the top.
Oh, yeah. I would imagine, like, Nakamura has height on... on Balor. They might be about the same size. Not the same size. Oh, 6'2", 230.
Okay, so yeah, Nakamura is bigger than you think he'd be.
Yeah, so he's kind of... He to me, in some ways, reminds me of Orton, who always is kind of like long and lanky. Like, he never looked like... is bulky, obviously, as like Batista, I guess, just to compare people in Evolution. Or even Triple H, for that matter. Yeah. You know, he was always kind of taller and leaner than them.
Yeah, I think it was like what Orton was. He was like, he had a big lower body because he had the super ass thighs. But you're 6'5", so 250 looks a lot different on 6'5" than it looked like on 6'2" or 6'3".
Yeah.
Because Sting was around the 250 range. Cena is around the 250 range. And they look a lot different than Randy Orton looks.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, it's kind of interesting. Like, that main event spot on Raw, at least, has really gone to the big guys. And I agree with you, like, to get back to the SummerSlam, it definitely looks like a three-man, at least, match that they're going to have going on. Because I would imagine that Strowman's going to show up to the Samoa Joe Roman Reigns match and wreak havoc again. To probably make that a four-man match like that,
and you know the weird thing about all of that, none of them were like traditional faces. None of them. It's just they're like Reigns is the face, but he gets booed 75% of the time. Lesnar is kind of like a tweener at best because like he wrestles faces, he wrestles heels, he acts the same way regardless. It's like he gets cheered. Depending on who he wrestles against. Joe is a heel that gets cheered. Like, Joe was getting cheered against Lesnar. And Joe was the heel. Like, at Great Balls of Fire.
Yeah.
And Strowman is the heel that gets cheered because he was wrestling Roman Reigns and people don't like Roman Reigns. He gets booed against other people. So it's like, I can't remember the time you had, like, a multiple-man match and nobody was really, like, a natural babyface.
And most of the times when that happens, I'd be like, oh, this is a terrible matchup. What the hell are they doing? But like you said, that interaction on Monday between Joe, Reigns, and Lesnar, just everyone being petty and still being cocky, thinking that they're going to win the match no matter who it was, it just cracked me up. Like, it was a really fun dynamic, and Strowman has the same attitude as those three, honestly.
Yeah. And they all have a reason to kind of feel that way because, like, Strowman's been beating up everybody. Lesnar's the champ. You know, Roman was running through people for years. And, like, I got to talk about – we didn't even talk about the match, like, the main event.
No.
Roman was beating Brock Lesnar's ass. Like, he came in and jumped him and put him through a table before the match even started. And most of the time, normally when you see those Lesnar matches, they tend to be, like, one-sided or it's kind of like – and it's usually Brock beating somebody up. They get a hope spot, and then Brock wins. And this one, it was like, Joe was beating him up. Brock got a little run. Joe was beating him up again, and then Brock hit him with the F5 and won. But Joe showed him, he showed way more, like, vulnerability against Joe than he ever did, like, Dean Ambrose.
Oh. Yeah, that isn't even in the same country. It's there's at least a Pacific Ocean between what happened in those matches.
Or even when he wrestled like the Undertaker, like the first time he beat Undertaker, it was like that was a fairly one-sided match. Like when he wrestled Cena the first time at SummerSlam, that was definitely one-sided. Like, and when he wrestled Reigns, like Reigns got in some offense, but it was basically Brock beating his ass and just not being able to pin him until Rollins came out. This one is like Joe had a point. He's like, you know, I had your number. I just slipped up. Like you escaped. You didn't really beat me. You just got to slip. And you're not used to saying that about a Brock Lesnar match that's no stipulations involved. Like it was just a straight up match.
Yeah, and it really helps to kind of have. It's been a lot of fun having Heyman rant against Joe, and just like you said, like. Joe's continued heelishness in all matters really kind of helps out.
Oh, you mean
at least storyline wise?
The renegade Samoan, they got kicked out the tribe, which is always funny. Is like, you know, I don't mind getting Master Reigns. He beat the Undertaker. He's Samoan royalty. You're a damn renegade savage. Like he had to escape off a boat because he. Killed the high chief or something like that. Like, it's amazing how they talk about some.
Oh yeah, you're allowed to talk about the Samoans that way still, evidently.
Yeah, like between, I still laugh when Rue said something about, you know, just sitting around a fire eating turkey leg with mayonnaise. I'm like, what do you say when someone says something like that in, like, the 21st century? Like,
just look at them funny. I don't quite get the mayonnaise part. I'd be okay with just the turkey leg.
And now I'm just thinking, like, The Rock was set eating a turkey leg with mayonnaise on it. like that was just so such a specific line. But no, I'm definitely looking forward to SummerSlam, just looking at that dynamic. And I think they were shocked by how over Joe, like the Joe Lesnar thing got. Like, that was, they booked Samoa Joe to be, like, Lesnar's equal and almost, like, superior. Because, like, Heyman, you notice, like, the way Heyman cuts promos, it's almost like he's kind of afraid of Samoa Joe, but doesn't want to admit it, because he doesn't, like, he wants no, like, wants no parts of him wrestling Brock Lesnar again. And normally Heyman's like, well, I don't care, Brock does what Brock wants to do. And this one is like, he's showing, like, you know, not a lot, but kind of like slight hesitation. And you're not used to dealing with that with, like, Brock Lesnar.
Yeah. And I don't know. It should be fun moving forward. Like, Joe has definitely stepped up to the plate. Like, when I was talking to Jeremy today, he still has that anger in him, but he's doing it well now. Like, he used to just, like, scream at the TV when he was in TNA. And it wasn't really guided well. And I don't know if I don't think they're giving him talking points, but they're kind of pointing him in the right direction. And it's working well. So, it's Joe's work has been, you know, it's hard to measure up to Heyman. And the fact that he is at least hanging in the pocket with Heyman is pretty impressive.
Yeah, and he's doing it in kind of like a calm way. And the whole book has not been like, you know, I'm afraid of Brock Lesnar, I want to overcome, I want to prove something. It's more like, I'm jealous of Brock Lesnar's spot. Like, I want what he wants. I want his schedule. I want his money. I want the title. And kiss my ass. And basically telling Brock Lesnar. And then the whole thing telling Paul Heyman, like, what he's going to do to him. And then do it. And then jumping Brock Lesnar the week after. It's like, you're not used to seeing Brock Lesnar be vulnerable. And the last person where he was kind of vulnerable. Like, even when he was wrestling Cena. And it was, like, competitive. It was almost like Cena was always the underdog. Like, the last time Lesnar was like vulnerable was wrestling Goldberg. And that was more kind of like, you know, he kept underestimating Goldberg. He thought Goldberg was just an old washed-up dude and kept getting caught with the spear and getting, like, flash beat. So as soon as you know, it lasted longer than 30 seconds, it was a wrap, as it should be. And this one, it was kind of like, you know, he needs to bring his A-game or he's going to get beat. And that's not even counting. And that's the thing of the fact that you have SummerSlam and the fact that you might have a four-way match. And two of the people are Samoa Joe and Braun Strowman. And people will be excited about that.
The Braun Strowman one is still just crazy to me. Like, at least Samoa Joe, you're like, oh, he has this track record quite literally around the world. And, you know, I guess it's not surprising that he stepped up in the WWE. It was just, unfortunately,
them giving him a chance.
Yeah.
It's like, not him not being able to compete, because everyone thinks he has. It's like, he looks the way he looks. He's old, so it's like, would they even give him the opportunity? It's like, you know, would he just be a mid-card guy? And they built him to be Brock Lesnar's equal.
Yeah, and that's going to do a lot for him moving forward. Because, I mean, Lesnar isn't going to be there all the time, and Joe's going to be put into more of a heel, like, you know, a traditional heel spot. And I think he should be able to maintain it. I mean, he still gets more boos than cheers, even though he's getting cheered somewhat. So, yeah, the Raw roster's in well, pretty good shape, honestly, especially at the main event level. Like, I mean, we've been talking about Finn Balor and how he can't be with them. Like, they so have nothing to do for him on Raw, especially in the main event picture, that he's stuck feuding with Elias Sampson.
Yeah. It's just, I think Raw, between the Raw is funny where it's top heavy with all the big guys now. The guys that used to be in the main event are on the mid card. And then you have 205, the women, and the tag teams. Like, it's a lot of bodies. Like, and they try to give time to everything. Like, you know, they give all this time. You go to The Miz and Dean Ambrose. And, like, The Miz doing something with Curtis Axel and what's his face?
Bo Dallas.
Bo Dallas. And then you got the stuff with R-Truth and Goldust. You got the stuff Titus O'Neil is doing. Like, he's making the cruiserweights important. Who would have thought that Titus O'Neil would be the key to the cruiserweights getting over? But that's been the thing. All the stuff involved with the women, even Alexa Bliss, and like I call her Scooby-Doo Elbow. So, like, you have, and then all the stuff with the tag teams. It's like, you got a lot of moving parts that are getting time, and it's kind of like, you know, you got to get in where you fit in, because otherwise you're going to get ignored.
Yeah, because that was kind of funny. We were talking before we came on air about SmackDown, and Ty Dillinger has certainly been a guy that's gotten ignored. Like, I really feel like even though I've seen him a couple of times, I guess now, like, Mike Kanellis and Maria Kanellis, they got a little more time tonight, but it's still kind of some odd timing for when they got brought on and the fact that they're not really pushing them in any concerted effort.
Like, they're there, but they're not wrestling. It's kind of like, you're assuming they're going to have something involved with Sami Zayn because they don't know what to do with Sami Zayn, and they have, like, chemistry, so it works. It's just funny, like, one, I wonder, how short is Chad Gable? How tall is Maria? Because she towered over Chad Gable in that second. I'm like, either she had it on 6-inch heels or Chad Gable's 5'2". Because I never remember Maria being, like, that tall. So, and it's funny where she's so much better now than she was when she was first in WWE. And I don't know, I guess, like, getting all those reps in TNA helps. The way they're pushing her helps. And she, like you say, like, you know, he's there. He's not wrestling. No, Ty Jones is there because he was popular. But even when he came, it's like, you just see, it's like he's just seemed like he's a guy. Like, there's a limit to how far he can go because he's, what, mid to late 30s already?
Yeah.
He's got size, but he doesn't have a whole lot of size. It's like, where does he go? Like, what does he's Scotty, I mean, it's almost like that Scotty Too Hotty thing where it's kind of like people care about you. You're going to have a job, but you got age. There's only so much you can do. And if they don't give you a chance, it's like you kind of stuck. But you're getting paid, so I'm not going to. Hey, I'd rather be on WWE and get WWE money than NXT money.
yeah, and hopefully they'll come up with something for him, but I mean, I guess I didn't get him when he came up. Granted, I kind of missed the popularity of the whole 10 thing. Like, I remembered him being a heel, and then all of a sudden, the next time I was watching NXT, everyone was dying for him to get into the Royal Rumble at number 10.
And I'm like, me and Jeremy talked about it for the longest, and it's kind of like, we all, like, there's something there, but none of us can explain it. Like, even now, I can't tell you what it is. Because I remember when he, like, the first time I saw him was, like, the night after WrestleMania in Dallas when he was wrestling Nakamura. And he was a heel then and was getting booed and stuff. And then it was like, you would have started liking him. And I don't know why. It's like, I don't know if it was the whole 10 thing. They appreciate him being there. Like, NXT is a funny thing where they'll appreciate the journey more necessary than, like, the ring work. If it's, like, somebody feel like put the work in. And it just became a thing, and it became a natural thing. And it just kept going and going. And they got to the point where, it, you know, even when he was on the main roster, that whole every time they would count outs was a 10 thing. It was like,
oh,
wow, that grew, and it was kind of like, I was laughing because I went to the Royal Rumble. It was like, it'd be hilarious if it's number 10 and, like, you know, Kurt Hawkins comes out. Like, Roman Reigns. So, and the fact that he came out, it's like everyone knew he was going to come out, and the fact that they actually let him come out as 10. And then even then, he was on the main roster until, like, you know what, post-Mania, I think?
Yeah, it still took a little bit of time for him to get onto the main roster.
Yeah, so it's kind of like that whole Tyler Breeze thing where it's like, you put the work in, you got yourself over, you did it yourself, so we reward you. And, yeah, Tyler Breeze Fandango, I don't know how the hell that works. It's one of those things where it's like, you know, it just proves the point, you just put two people together and somehow those are the best tag teams, but in all honesty, should have died on the vine because those skits are ridiculous. And somehow, and they were both like heels that nobody really cared about anymore. And they got them, it worked. Like, I was talking to Jeremy about it. He was saying, like, I don't know if it overstayed. I'm like, no. They showed the clip on it, like, on the screen. People started cheering before the skit even started. That's how you know you're over. It's like when they're excited to see you. And they're not even wrestling. It's not even the wrestling part. Even though their wrestling match is enjoyable, it's just the fact that they have this goofy chemistry where it's kind of like, it's a joke. They know it's a joke, but they almost play like maybe they don't know it's a joke. It's like that whole, it's a bounce to find where it's like, it's almost like the Naked Gun is what I think about. It's like, you know, it's playing for humor, but they're kind of playing it semi-straight, and everybody else is kind of looking at like, what do you, like, what would Zack Ryder say? He sees Fandango riding on a fake horse. Like, how do you respond to something like that?
Yeah, there isn't a good adult way to respond to that. And, I guess, because you mentioned it, Goldust and R-Truth, like, honestly, if they left them out of the ring, I would be much happier. The segments have been fine. And it's the same thing with Fandango and Tyler Breeze. The segments are cool. Like, they're better wrestlers than Goldust and R-Truth. But, of course, they're both not pushing 50 either.
Yeah. And I will give Fandango and Tyler Breeze props, especially Tyler Breeze, because he wrestled as a janitor. And he threw a dropkick as an old lady. So, yeah, I still laugh at that tag match they had with the Usos. It was like, that was way more enjoyable than any right to be. And kudos to Tyler Breeze, because his old gimmick, I always thought was going down the vine when he got on the main roster. And he reinvented himself, and so did Fandango, and they embraced it and ran with it, and it worked. Like, I love their interaction. It's funny how their interaction with the Usos seems better than the New Day with the Usos, even though the New Day's a more popular and a better team. Because it's like, they're supposed to be goofy, but they're treating it that way. But it seemed like it fit. New Day's whole thing with the Usos is like, they're laughing at the Usos, even though they don't really have any right to be, because the Usos keep beating them up. And the Usos are treating them like, you know, you're out here cracking jokes, and you're going to catch these hands. Like, jokes are over. Let's fight. And the New Day's kind of looking down and like, oh, that's cute. And why don't you got the face paint out and where's your wife? It was like, they're the champs and they're beating you. You need to start acting that way.
I guess it'll be interesting. New Day maybe needs to, they're still really entertaining, so it's hard to say that they need to change it up. But I guess they kind of need to change it up if everyone else is kind of serious in the division.
Yeah, it's going to get to the point, and it's funny how things kind of roll around themselves, because when the New Day first became a team, like, the Usos were like king of the hill, and the Usos got pushed out because the New Day were heels, but they were popular heels. And if the heels are more popular than the babyfaces, that's a problem. They were more enjoyable than the Usos were, and they weren't supposed to be. So the Usos suffer from that. So seeing the Usos do that first to American Alpha, and then now kind of doing it to the New Day is like almost like poetic justice. it's almost like they're getting payback because the Usos have been more enjoyable. Like, that rap battle, they slaughtered the New Day. Like, it was not close. And it was just amazing how one-sided it was. And it was one-sided in a way that you didn't think it'd be. Like, the heels clowning the baby faces is not normally a thing you see. Like, if Triple H did that to somebody, people would normally criticize, like, he's Bigfooting baby faces. Like, the Usos basically Bigfooted the New Day. And you wouldn't expect that to happen. So, yeah, they need, like, the New Day needs to get their edge back. Everything can't be, like, a funny joke. And that's the difference between them when they were heels being cheered and them as baby faces now. It's like, almost like a Doink the Clown thing. Like, they took the edge away.
Oh. Yeah. And, yeah, I guess they can tweak things a little bit. And I do think that it helped. And it's one of those things that they've used Xavier Woods as a wrestler a lot. But everyone kind of knew he was the joke of the team. And at least he got a win tonight. I don't know if that doesn't make him a joke. It kind of makes him like our other subject we were talking about pre-show, Jinder Mahal. Like, he's got to kind of string together some wins to start getting some level of credibility before you start to believe it. I mean, Kofi's been around long enough, and Big E is always an easy sell because he's huge.
Yeah. Like, they both had single success. And they're both, like, especially Kofi's had, like, long-term credibility. And, like, it didn't help that Xavier had a few matches, and he basically became a manager, and he acted like a manager, even though he's, like, he's built, and he's athletic enough that, like, he could wrestle in the ring. It's just they never used him. So all of a sudden, it's like, and then the few times they used him, it was almost kind of like he's the weak link of the team. And then all stuff with the Wyatts, when Bray Wyatt used to, like, creep him out, and it's like, I don't even want to wrestle, like, people still remember that, and it takes a while to get over that, but at least he has the athletic ability to get over that, something that Enzo Amore cannot say, and such a shame.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what they decide to do with him, because obviously they still want him with a microphone in his hands, but wow, he is not a good wrestler.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like he's not, and I've brought it up before. You normally don't see people that small that are bad wrestlers that get opportunities to continue wrestling. Like, you can be bad and big, because at least you're big. And you can be bad and muscular, because at least you have a body. But if you're bad and small, that usually does not work. Like, you know, unless you're a woman. Like, when you're a man, that usually doesn't, they don't let you slide with that. And he's good enough on the mic, and, like, he's really good on the mic, where it's kind of like, it's funny where he has the, it's like, they're better than the parts are better than the song. And, like, Kaz has the look and everything like that, and kudos to Kaz, like, him being a heel, he definitely has more, his personality showing off more. But even though it's like, I've never been impressed by Kaz, like, yeah, he's tall, and that's it. He's Baron Corbin with a better diet and better genetics. Like, he has his hair, and he, you know, he's in better shape. And that's about it. And people are booing him, and, like, he's really getting booed to paper because they like Kaz so much. And Kaz cutting these promos, like, make you care about that. But it doesn't help since the match over. It's like Booker T saying, like, you know, this is going to be over quick, dog. Like, Enzo doesn't have a chance. It's like, well, why am I going to watch? And Booker T is not a heel commentator, but he's one thing about Booker T is he's painfully honest when he wants to be. And he basically said, like, you know, Enzo ain't got a chance in hell, cash it and steamroll him. Why are we even wasting our time like this?
Yeah, I mean, he, like you said, he's painfully correct. They did their best to try and sell it, and Enzo even, it was kind of strange to me that Enzo had to talk himself up. Like, it was almost like, you know, John Cena really did, like, you were talking about it earlier, Cena kind of made a similar speech when he was fighting Brock Lesnar. You know, it was more like, I'm tough and I'm strong and I just might be able to pull it off against this monster. And Enzo kind of had a similar message. So it was, yeah, it's kind of strange. The whole thing is strange.
Yeah, Enzo knows how he looks, and he knows he's the size that he is, and Kaz is the size that he is, and Kaz knows too. So it's kind of like, you know I'm going to lose, but I can't go out like a punk. Like, what do you expect me to do? Like, if I'm going to go out, I'm going to go out. And unfortunately, like, you know, Kaz is treating him like a lawn dart. It's funny that the Big Show got involved in this whole thing because he was like part of that story from Jump Street. And seeing the Big Show just beating the crap out of Kaz, including busting out his old school mat work he used to use with Kane. Like, I've never seen the Big Show do an alligator roll before. And seeing somebody that damn big doing it to another tall guy just seems like it was like a Godzilla fight. like this big ass man is doing chain wrestling in a brawl.
Yeah, it was kind of that was definitely strange too. Like, I was just like, oh, because there was no way. I did not expect Big Show to whoop his ass that cleanly. Like, normally, yeah, sure, the heel will back out and say better place, better time, or you know, maybe the babyface just gets in a cheap shot or something, and then the heel rolls out. Well, I shouldn't even say a cheap shot. He gets in one good shot, and the heel leaves. That did not happen. Like, Cass tried to put up a fight, and it didn't really turn out well for him at all.
Yeah, and it's always funny with the Big Show, because it's like, how is weird booking him, because it's like, there's a way to book him where he would theoretically be, like, unbeatable. Because especially now, like, he's in shape. It's like, he's big. He's a veteran. They put over his move. They put over his knockout punch. It's like, you know, Kaz might be younger, but, I mean, to be honest, like, Big Show should dominate Kaz. Like, he's bigger. He's stronger. He's smarter. He has more experience. And it's like, Kaz might be more athletic. He's not that much more. Like, Big Show is a Mark Henry like that can barely move, especially like slim down Big Show. So
right,
it played out the way that you would think it played out in real life, but you wouldn't expect it to happen because like Kaz is on the up and up. Like, he's the rising star. Big Show is there to make him look good, and Big Show just dominated him. Like, just beat the crap out of him, standing up, like out wrestled him on the ground, and Kaz bounced out, and it's like, wow.
Yeah, that was really, really surprising to see that happen. So, and I'm trying to think of what other things. Oh, that was the other thing that I had to think of, which is completely off of this this subject that we didn't get around to. But it was something that happened even before Great Balls of Fire. AJ Styles winning the U.S. title at a house show, which isn't really a house show since it was in Madison Square Garden.
Yeah, but it's funny, like, it wasn't on TV, and it's interesting because they've done stuff like that. It's been a while since they've had that, and, you know, it's like Madison Square Garden is still a big deal even though they don't have televised shows because it's so damn expensive. That's why, you know, that's why I kind of like Brooklyn is like their New York place now. And it was like, you know, people were making speculation, like, is Kevin Owens get suspended? Did he get hurt? And like, he wrestled on SmackDown. He looked, I don't know if he was nervous or injured. Like, he looked fine on SmackDown. So it was just, it's weird because it's just, it was unexpected. It's like Battle Rounds coming up. They just made a big deal about the Battle Royal. You would assume that, you know, they'd have the match at Battle Round.
Right.
And the fact that, you know, he wins the Battle Royal on a Tuesday, he wins the title on a Friday, I'm like, I know it's Madison Square Garden, and, like, they treat it like a big deal. Like, you know, Brock has been to a few house shows before, but it's like, you normally don't have title changes at house shows unless somebody gets hurt or somebody gets suspended. Or, like, NXT did that with Joe and Nakamura when Joe beat him, like, on a random show, and then he showed on NXT. It's been a while since they've done that on TV. I mean, since they've been like on the main roster, like they had a non-televised title change.
Yeah.
And usually it's like you would expect it's kind of like, okay, he went on Friday, he's going to lose the belt back on Saturday? It's like, no. He came on Tuesday with the belt. They opened up SmackDown, making a big deal of him winning at Madison Square Garden, how important it was. And the fact that it was scheduled as a Raw show that just happened to have a SmackDown match.
Oh. I didn't realize that part.
That's kind of the way they talked about it. Like, that's how they were describing it. Like, that kind of stands out even more. It's like, yeah, they really like AJ Styles. I mean, they do. Like, he's been booked better than, 90% of the roster. You know, like, he's booked wide when he was a heel. He tried everything he could to get booed, and they wouldn't boo him because he was so good. And now it's a babyface. It's like, you know, John Cena's giving him the ultimate, like, you know, reinforcement, the ultimate endorsement. Like, John Cena's basically the godfather of WWE at this point. He's basically like the Undertaker at this point, where he's like, his name carries weight. And I was thinking about that because they were talking about ratings, and they were like, last week, all the shows had increased ratings. Like, it was like SmackDown did normal numbers on July 4th. They're usually down 40-50%, and they barely dropped. Like, they say that never happens. They're like, that's John Cena. If anyone has any doubts, like, why is John Cena a ratings draw? Like, yes, John Cena is a ratings draw.
Yeah, and it certainly looks like, him and his in that flag match.
Why are they doing that?
That's a good question. Because it does. If you want Rusev to be relevant, he can't lose to Cena. If you want Jinder Mahal to get another signature win over someone not named Randy Orton, you'd think that it'd be kind of Captain America, John Cena, to come to the rescue. So that's the only thing I can think of, is that they want Cena, Mahal, but I don't know why you're sacrificing Rusev to do it. Like, there are other people that you could do that with, I'm sure.
SmackDown's in a weird spot where they have people that they want to wrestle each other, but they can't lose because it's kind of like the same thing like Baron Corbin. Like, he has the Money in the Bank briefcase. You assume he's going to be world champ eventually. They got him wrestling Nakamura, and Nakamura hasn't lost yet. So it's like...
Well, and Nakamura's only had, really, one opponent in Dolph Ziggler.
Yeah, but even, like he's... Even, like, on TV, it's like, tag matches, regular matches, like, he was pinning Kevin Owens in tag matches a couple times. Like, Nakamura's basically been... Since he showed up, he's been treated like a big deal, and they want to continue to do that, because, like, you assume eventually he's going to be wrestling for the title, but it's kind of like he's dealing with Baron Corbin. They don't want Baron Corbin to lose, but they want Nakamura to lose. You want to do something with Cena, but you want to do something with Rusev, and you set both of them up to deal with Jinder Mahal, but it's like somebody's got to lose. And we talked about how Raw is like top heavy at the top with like big guys. SmackDown is just top heavy, where you either like at the top of the card or you're at the bottom. Like, it's really no in between.
Oh. Yeah, the in between kind of, the Miz helped to be the in between, and he got sucked over to Raw. And,
Like him and Dean Ambrose were basically their mid card, and now they're both gone. It's kind of like the mid card are the women. Because you don't even. Luke Harper shows up to have a match. I can't remember the last time he saw Eric Rowan. It's the mid-card is the tag team and the women. Like, who's a single? And, like, Dolph Ziggler just shows up to get beat up by somebody in the main event. And Sami Zayn's messed around with the Canelluses. But that's about it.
Yeah. SmackDown, as much as I enjoy it, it's kind of in a weird spot. At the current moment, they have some work to do to get things straightened out. I don't know. Is there anything else that we haven't covered?
The women, I guess we can wrap up with that. Like, yeah. It's funny comparing the women on Raw and SmackDown, and it's like the women on SmackDown just seem to be in so much better spot. So, like, everyone has a, like, an assigned thing. It's like kind of like Naomi's the champ. Like, she wants competition. And at the same time, she's feeling a certain way because Carmella can kind of jump in and cash her title, like cash her money in bank thing, whatever she wants. It's like everyone's making fun of her. Like, why is Lana getting title matches? Like, she hasn't beat anybody. She keeps getting opportunities. And I like how Charlotte pointed out on the show. It's like, I know this is the land of opportunity, but is this fantasy land? Like, why is she having a match with us? Like, we can actually wrestle. She can. She never beat anybody. How is she just getting these chances? And it's funny how Tamina and Naomi and Natalya is like, well, if she's as bad as you say, what you worried about her for? Just beat her. Which is a good point. But it's funny, like, that's a valid point, but you wouldn't think of that being like a rebuttal.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, you're still kind of wasting time. Like, even though you're going to win, it's just like, really? Like, I've got to do this? It's like getting a squash match. I guess. I know I get
the match I get paid for, but why am I wasting my time having this?
Yeah, so, that's really their kind of point of view, which I do understand. Like, I guess that's another one where you can kind of understand both people's points. Like, you can understand the heels going, well, then why are you worried? And the other people are like, fuck off. Like, I don't need to waste my time.
Yeah, it's like, I'm worried, taking out the trash. I don't worry about tripping and falling out, taking out the trash, but I don't feel like wasting my time taking out the trash. She's like, why am I doing this? And it's funny where they have these opponents for Naomi. I know people brought up, like, maybe Naomi's still hurt or she's still injured. It's like, I think it's more like they're saving. Like, they don't – she's got people to wrestle, but it's like they don't want to go to it yet. Because it's funny where her and Becky Lynch are, like, natural baby faces. Charlotte isn't a baby face. She's just teamed up with them. But she makes a good point, like, you know – I don't really, like, we kind of cool, but I still want my title match. Like, I like how they're booking Charlotte. Like, Charlotte is still being herself where she's going to team with Becky Lynch because they know each other, and they're kind of, like, cool, but she's not acting like a goody two-shoes. Like, she still wants a title match, and she still wants her chance, and she's just waiting for that. And then you got the other three. It's kind of like Tamina taking Lana under her wing, because Carmella's not part of that thing anymore. And it's like Natalya's being there, like, you know, the grizzled veteran. And I got to bring up Carmella because I know a lot of people brought the whole thing. It's like they were mad that James Ellsworth was a thing and it took away from the match and everything like that. And even though they did a redo, it doesn't count. Lost in all this is the fact that it's funny everyone's getting mad at James Ellsworth being involved. No one brought up the fact that Carmella won. And she's the worst wrestler on the roster, on the SmackDown roster by far. This whole women empowerment and women equality thing, no one has an issue with that. I haven't heard one person bring that point up.
I guess I'm okay with it because the briefcase A is more of a heel thing. It would seem odd to have Natalya win it. It'd seem even stranger to have Tamina win it. Because, well, yeah, Natalya has the credit that isn't the credit, really. You know, since she's part of the Hart family. And Tamina has the size, which, you know, Nia Jax always has. But, you know, Carmella doesn't have that, so she kind of needed the Money in the Bank contract.
And that's my point. Like, I don't have a problem with her winning, and it was funny just hearing the criticism. I'm like, Carmella, like, she's ever since she's been there, she's been that way. She's been winning by cheating. She's been winning by help. She she's never really had, like, straight-up fights where she seemed like it was an equal fight because it's like she doesn't have the experience. She brought up a good point, like, you know, y'all talking about this women revolution and blah, blah, blah. I ain't here for all that. I'm trying to win. I'm trying to get paid and do something. And it's plenty of women that, like, forget this whole women equality thing. I'm going to get mine. I'll use a man to do it. Like, that happens in real life. I think it's kind of like people feel uncomfortable because it kind of reminded them of like, that type of thing. And it's like, why? How else would Carmella have a chance? She's not as good as any of them. She can't hang with them in the ring. And now, like, the Money in the Bank is a heel thing anyway. It's like you basically jumping somebody after they have a match to steal the title. So...
yeah, unless you're Damian Sandow.
And that whole thing is kind of like, yeah, I don't mind she winning, but I mind because Angel. Like, if she'd have won without James Ellsworth, how was that going to look? What, she, all four of them climb up the ladder, she push them all off a climb? Because that's the only way she would win by herself. It's like, she can't hang with them. And they booked it on TV where it's like, unless she's cheated, she can't win fair and square. Not even like a heel thing. It's like, she's not good enough. And even it's kind of like, she makes Alexa Bliss look like, you know, the great Buddha. Like, Alexa Bliss is not that necessarily... Alexa Bliss is passable, but she got over because her personality and her promos. But her ring work is like, she's okay, but she's not like on the level like Sasha Banks or Becky Lynch or like Charlotte or Bayley. But she can kind of like wrestle with them and not embarrass herself too much. Carmella's not even on that level yet.
No, and it was always strange. Well, it's been strange to me since her debut. Like, she didn't really wrestle much when I was watching NXT. So the fact that she's been on her own and been a wrestler the whole time that she's been on the main roster has kind of been a curious choice to me. But
and she got over on person. She got over on personality. Like, that whole feud with Nikki Bella, it was basically talking. Like, she got over by talking and by cutting promos, almost like Enzo. And it's funny where, it's just funny thinking about that, like, you know, she got over the same way Enzo got over, and it helps that she looks the way she looks. It's like, you cannot discount that. Like, you know, she's a blonde woman that's has great facial features and is in awesome shape.
Yeah.
That still gets you. Like, you can be Women's Revolution all you want, and wrestling matters, but looking good also matters. Like, you know, that will get you like, that'll still get you placed. If you pass on the ring and you look the way that Carmella looks, even though her face kind of reminds me of Big Bird sometimes. Because, like, it's, I think it's because it's, like, so narrow, and she got, like a long-ass nose.
Right.
Like, vertical-wise, it's like, she's a very attractive, but in a funny way.
Yeah, I know what you're getting at there.
which is weird. It's kind of like, that's, and it's just, yeah. But it's like, it's entertaining. And I feel better for them than the Raw women, because it's like, it just seemed like it's a mess with the Raw women.
Yeah, like, I don't know why Sasha Banks has a match. She loses or wins by count out, but then she's the one introducing Bayley on Monday. Shouldn't it be the other way around so that you can kind of hype the next Banks Bliss match?
Yeah, it's like they don't know what to do. It's kind of like the fact where they seem like they're leaning toward Bliss and Nia Jax, which is kind of like heel versus heel seems. With women seems weird with those two, because that's just, like, Nia Jax to squash her. But who would want to see that? And it's kind of like, you know, Sasha Banks is the most over of the women, and it's like, they don't want her to have the title, but they don't want her necessarily to lose. They treat Bella like trash. And it's kind of like, the other two women, like Dana Brooke and Emma, are just there. Mickie James might as well be on a damn milk carton. Out of all the people that moved to Raw, like, that, for her, that was just a hard, because it's kind of like, they're not going to do anything with her, because she's like, you know, yeah, she can wrestle, she's a hand, but she's too old. They're going to be like, she's too old. We got these young girls.
Well, that, and I mean, everyone talks about the Hardys trying to live on nostalgia. Like, Mickey James never really reinvented herself at all. You know, she just took her WWE persona and moved it to TNA. And it helped because there were a bunch of good women wrestlers in TNA. They could get, you know, they could get everyone over. But on Raw, it's just like, oh, man. It's just the same thing. Like, again, to go back to the Hardys, which we did at the top of the show, at least they've been alluding to their new characters. Mickey James has nothing new to allude to, aside from the fact that she's continues to dress up as an Indian woman for reasons that are still not completely...
Because she is actually part Native Indian. American, as she will point people out when people ask, like, why, even though they're still, like, kind of like, being Native American doesn't mean you get to wear the headdress because you're not a chief, but she's actually real-life Native American, surprisingly.
Well, yeah, and I thought I had heard that before, but the problem is that the WWE hasn't really noted that or given her mic time to note why she does this. It's just she just pops up when an Indian headdress, and you're like, huh?
Yeah, and it's always been funny. It's like, because otherwise, like, why is she dressed, like, why is she appropriating that culture? And even though it's part of her culture, but it's like, unless you went on Wikipedia or you were her friend, you have no idea. Like, she's done it before, and it's funny where she's done it before, and the question always comes up, and they just, instead of, like, Coke, they just say, you know, she's showing respect to her Native, you know, Native American roots. Like, when they used to do with Batista, like, oh, he come out the Filipino flag. Imagine Batista come out the Filipino flag, and they didn't mention that he was half Filipino. You're like, what is he doing? Like, what is he doing? Like, The Rock, you wouldn't know, like, you know, his dad was, like, you knew his dad was Rocky Johnson, and they never talked about his mom's side. Like, why is he coming out with Roman Reigns? So, it's like, man, Mickey James is a funny thing where she works better as a heel than a face, but they're treating her like a face because they got enough heels. But it's like, you know, she's just there. You're supposed to care about her because you remember her, like, how many, no, you remember her, like, 7-8 years ago? Like, she's not as big as the Hardy Boys was when they were in WWE, and she's not as big as the Hardy Boys were in TNA either. So it's like, she had the stuff with Asuka, and it was like, because it was out the blue, and she didn't that work. And when SmackDown, her being a heel worked because it's like, I remember this as a character. Now it's like, oh, I'm coming out doing my skip. Look at me.
I'm happy. I'm go lucky. Happy.
Yeah, it's like the whole when Rhino comes out with Heath Slater, at least Heath Slater's there. It's like, imagine Rhino being a singles wrestler. Like, okay. Welcome back, I guess. I think it's like, you know, you bring back the McRib sandwich, and then you remember that it's still McDonald's rib sandwich. And you're like, yeah, okay, what am I supposed to do with this?
You are supposed to eat it.
Yeah, I just compared Mickey James to the damn McRib, and I feel bad about that.
Well, it's the root of a lot of people's problems, honestly. She hasn't had any mic time at all since she, well, I shouldn't say at all. She had a little bit, but she was still playing second fiddle to Alexa Bliss when she did have it. So yeah.
at least on SmackDown, like, she got enough time to talk about, at least between the show and especially talking smack, she got enough time to talk about her character. It was like, and it was clear, like, you know, she was coming back because she felt disrespected and she wanted her respect and approval. And it's funny where I remember watching the table for three with, like, Kelly and Maryse and Eve Torres, and they kind of said the same thing. Is like, the way people talk is like, they assume women's wrestling went from Trish Stratus and Lita to the girls now. It's like, no, we wrestled too. And we, and like, you know, it's like we got forgotten. We tried our best. We tried to learn, but you can only do so much when you wrestling put-in matches or you get like 3-minute matches. It's like, what do y'all expect us to do? Like, we bust our ass and y'all act like we didn't exist. And it's fun, like, that point has come up with a lot of women from that era, but like, and that was kind of like Mickie James' whole thing. Is like, you know, I was having these matches, I was having good matches, and you act like I didn't matter, like I didn't exist. I'm gonna prove to you, like, no, I'm part of this history too, and I'm gonna show you I still have it. On Raw, it's like she's just there.
Yeah, she really is. I mean, she's lost that part of her identity, and that's been a long-standing problem with Raw. Like, I don't feel like it's changed at all. It was Sasha and Charlotte for so long on Raw, and now it's Alexa, Sasha, and there was a little bit of Bayley thrown in there to start with, at least with Alexa Bayley, but. You know, Raw seems only capable of concentrating on two women at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just, yeah, they just can't do anything else with anyone. And it makes no sense. Like, again, like we kind of talked a lot about the characters on Raw who've been fleshed out. And for some reason, the women can't find time on a 3-hour show. You know, they throw them into a couple of matches, but that doesn't do you that much good.
And they can't use the excuse of, like, roster or anything like that. Because I remember it was a time when it was a short time frame. I remember, like, how, and I remember it because how weird it was. They had, like, 4 or 5 women's feuds happen at the same time. And I had, normally it's, like, no more than 2. And they had, like, multiple ones. And I can remember, and it didn't last that long. But the fact that it happened is, like, wow. Because it was kind of like, you know, the Bellas were doing something. Layla and Summer Rae was having a few. It was some other women having a few. Like, it was like at least like 4 feuds and maybe 5 few separate feuds involving women. So, and that was before the whole quote unquote women's revolution thing. There's no excuse now. You can have more, like, it don't have to, and it's funny, it doesn't have to be the Alexa. I know they like Alexa Bliss. It doesn't have to be the Alexa Bliss show and then you just rotate Sasha with Bayley. And then sometimes you make it a tag match with Dana Brooke. And then you got Nia Jax and Emma in there. And it's like, you know, the Emmalina back to Emma thing. It's like, that's there. Dana Brooke's a babyface because I guess she's supposed to be.
Because Charlotte booted her to the curb. But then she disappeared for the whole, Arnold Classic. Mm-hmm. So you kind of forgot that she was around anyway.
Yeah, it's like, you know, and then Nia Jax is kind of like that whole elephant, I don't even want to use, like, the term doesn't match the body, like, elephant in the room is like, they book her as a monster, you know, she only wins, like, she loses only when it's like, it's a fluke or she messes up, but it's like, how are you going to have a heel? We talked about the whole heel thing, but it's kind of like, you know, like, with Reigns and Lesnar and them, like, they still have likable things. If they go with that whole route of Alexa Bliss wrestling Nia Jax, how is that supposed to work? Like, Alexa Bliss is popular, but she's not likable. Nia Jax is a monster. She's not sympathetic. Nia Jax squashes her in 5 minutes, or, like, Alexa Bliss wins in a fluke, is like, who's the crossbow to cheer for?
Yeah, and I don't know, because she's also kind of losing something. You mentioned that, you know, she can hang with people, but she can't necessarily carry the action. And you've got to be a lot of the movement. Not that Nia Jax is immobile, but, like, Sasha does a good job of, you know, being the speed around her. And at least Bayley is closer to the neighborhood of Nia's size, so you can put up some type of a credible threat. Or at least you can see her using her still somewhat of a speed advantage and additional size. Yeah, to.
It's funny about that. Like, that's technically true, but then you realize, like, Bayley still weighs about 140 pounds less than Nia Jax. But since she weighs, like, maybe in the 130, 140 range and not, like, the 110 range. Like,
yeah.
It's kind of like, it's...
I understand.
Nia Jax can't be a face. It's like, it's the reason why Vader works better as a heel than the face. Like, Nia Jax is a monster. So you got to wrestle somebody that can, like, bump and move around. Alexa Bliss isn't really that style, like, and she's a heel. But she doesn't, it's funny where she's a heel, but she wrestles the more, like, you know, I punch, kick, do moves. Like, she's athletic in a way, like, I can do a lot of, I can do flips, I can do a backflip, I can do a moonsault. But not athletic as far as, like, how Sasha Banks is. Like, Sasha Banks has, like, that better, worse Dolph Ziggler gene, where I can make a lot of movements, I can take a lot of bumps, like Mr. Perfect, and make my opponent look good, because I look painful. Alexa Bliss doesn't wrestle that style, and she doesn't wrestle that well, so I guess we'll see.
Oh, yes, we shall. I'm at Frango11, he is at ShawFarmD. The brand is at Stunt Granny. Tonight's Belt Time beer is Stunt Granny own Black Belt IPA, which is the precursor to the Ultimate Thrill Rye. Still pretty good. Unlike the Hefeweizen German suplex that I busted out that did not age well, Black IPA aging much better in the basement. So that's it for me, and I will let Shahid handle things on the way out.
For Jeremy Mays, I'm Shahid Dohadi, and I don't have an IPA. We are out.